even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Welcome back to the latest episode of Blaster Cannon via Den of Geek. I am one of your hosts, Paul Herman. I am here with Megan Krause.
Hello.
And the wonderful Seth.
Hello.
Happy belated birthday, Seth.
Thank you.
Yes, happy birthday too.
Yeah.
Birthday the
American version.
Yeah, David Bowie changes the birth date. He was born in England, obviously, on January 9th, but he had his birth certificate changed to the American time so he can be born the same day as Elvis Presley.
January 8th, God.
Which is also the same day as me. So that's why I know this.
Oh, that's lovely.
Yeah, yes, it's very lovely. So anyway, happy birthday, Sav.
Thank you.
Do you have Star Warsy for your birthday?
No, but that might just be because it's a lockdown, so I might get something after.
Thanks for bringing up the lockdown. Yes, and everyone, I'm hoping everyone is safe and in this whole craziness of the entire world, obviously. And the lovely lady has got the brunt of my grumpiness of being locked in and just amidst of all this stuff. And it's been hard. So I'm not gonna lie, it's been hard on me. But I'm excited because I think Star Wars is gonna help me make me feel better. So
yeah, you're out there fighting, which is, I think, really admirable. Yeah. And I have been wondering whether you guys feel any different about how you like engage with Star Wars now. Are you finding that you are more or less into fanish things, or is it just exactly the same? For me, I think it's pretty much the same. Like, I've had kind of a bit of a creative block. I'm not really creating a lot, but I'm re-consuming a lot of things, both Star Wars and otherwise, but that's what I usually do in the winter, just like when it's cold. So really not much has changed about how, like, what my relationship to Star Wars is. Have you experienced anything connected to that?
I think it comes and goes depending on the day. Like, some days I will just kind of get really into Star Wars again, tweeting about it or like thinking about it. like, I binged the Clone Wars that I was not caught up on the other day, and that was nice, and I was like, oh, I love Star Wars. But some days I'm just like focusing on other stuff anyways. I've been a lot more creative than usual, which has been nice.
That's awesome. Right on. When I love something like Star Wars or Marvel, or, you know, I mean, football, I'm a big football fan, American football. And I don't really, my love and passion for those things kind of, they don't ever go away, but sometimes one might overtake the other for a short period of time, but I always come back to it. And that's kind of been my way since I was a kid for all kinds of things that I love. And I, for Star Wars specifically though, yeah, it's always the same, but yeah, right now, because of, all the latest, things that have come out for Star Wars, it's really kind of ramped up, I think, because I'm stuck at home. And in the first bit of news, we've got The Rise of Skywalker is out digitally and physically. And so, yeah, I have got there's been lots of Star Wars-ness going on in my FD studios here because of all the new latest releases. But The Rise of Skywalker is out digitally. Have you guys picked this up at all? Physical copy, digital copy, anything?
Not yet.
Okay.
I keep meaning to and then forgetting because something else happens.
Right.
Megan? My digital media library is definitely a victim of streaming services. I watched a lot of things on Disney Plus. I haven't like brought a DVD out in a long, long time. So I think that combined with just my budget right now means that my buying any like media on disc has pretty much halted completely. So Tross is simply not an exception.
I'm a big collector. I have my Canon shelf, which I'm going to set up this weekend. I've got a number of things I need to add to it. Obviously, The Rise of Skywalker is the big reason. I basically only update my shelf once I get like a big release out, like a book or multiple books or whatever. But like I over the months, I'll collect like, you know, some Star Wars adventure comics and some Marvel comics and some children's books that are, you know, canon stories. And I kind of wait for a big release to kind of put it all out there to kind of, you know, whatever. And I'm going to reconfigure my whole shelf a little bit and looking forward to that. But yeah, I'm really excited about, I love collecting stuff. I even bought the Rise of Skywalker digitally when it first came out, and just because I couldn't wait. I just was really excited. And I got the digital physical copy the other day, and I was able to actually watch both. I was able to watch it physically on disc. And I can tell you right now, if you're a UHD 4K person like myself, and you like you're kind of obsessed with the best visual presentation, I can tell you right now, the even with Dolby Vision streaming, the physical is still better, in my opinion. And it's, I don't have a Dolby TV, maybe, but even technically speaking, still better technically, because it's more information you're putting out. And it's what's funny is when I still like the transfer, it still looks good on digitally. I'm not saying it looks bad, but I'm just saying when I watched the physical disc version, much more dynamic, if you will. I watched the digital version, by the way, like 3-4 times. I'm not kidding you. I watched it a ton. And the first, I even said this in my tweet, I think a couple weeks ago, that it's very grainy. Which again, that's because they shot it in film, and the way that, you know, everything and all the saturated colors, the Dolby Vision really enhances the colors and it really sucks out a lot of the darks. And you could see all the grain, just a grainy. And I kind of liked it. It gives a different character to it. Then I watched the physical disc, and it was completely gone. And all the darks were way more present. And that's where it creates that more of an atmosphere but overall just kind of dynamics on the screen. The best example is if you have both the physical, if you have the physical 4K and you have, obviously you probably redeem your digital copy. If you just watch the intro with Kylo Ren going to Exegol, you'll see a difference right away. I was like, whoa, this looks a lot different. And it was a lot darker and a little, again, more dynamic because of that. And the whole movie just was more just, again, the lights were lighter, or the lights were kind of just more just in line with the darks, and it just looked great. It was a great presentation. And obviously the Skywalker Saga box set, which I'm assuming you ladies didn't buy either, came out as well, which is the 4K box set, I spent a lot of money on, and my wife yelled at me when it came out eventually of our bank account amidst these trying times, and I got yelled at, but I was able to still get it. Thank you. Thank you, Morgan. And, but yeah, I just started the, and Rogue One came in on 4K too. So as you guys can tell, I'm a giant 4K and visual kind of presentation person. So I'm really excited to dive in. I already watched The Phantom Menace. It looked great. So I have read all the reviews or a bunch of reviews on these 4Ks themselves. And I've heard, and I can't wait to watch it, is that Rogue One is the best looking Star Wars movie out there.
I really need to rewatch that. I mean, I don't have the 4K set up here, but I keep thinking I need to rewatch Rogue One.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, and if you're wondering, well, I have, you know, because Disney Plus obviously has the 4K stream, or has the, you know, 4K streaming. You're wondering, well, that's the same thing, right? Well, no, because again, streaming's not going to be as powerful as the disc. And I was reading reviews that they said, yeah, this trumps the streaming. The physical disc themselves, they 100% trump the streaming by a lot, as far as how much information and how much, you know, power that the or how much it's able to present in 4K or its highest definition or whatever. So I'm not doing a very good job explaining it, but basically it's still the better way to go at this point to watch them from a visual standpoint. So I'm really excited. I have only watched Phantom Menace, and I'm going to go through probably a bunch of Star Wars movies this weekend. So I'm really, really excited about that. So yeah, you'll be, if you follow me on Twitter at Herman22, you'll see a bunch of live tweets basically talking about just me reviewing as I watch it, the 4K films at some point. So anyway, moving on to books and comics. It looks like comics were delayed, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. I meant to ask about this because as of now, there's no change to the book publishing schedules. Because book publishing works so far ahead of time, things that are being worked on, things that are coming out months or even years from now are being worked on now. So there will not be delays until maybe the fall is kind of the... That's not confirmed by anything, but it's likely based on how publishing schedules work. So no changes there yet, but I wanted to ask about what changes were happening in the comic lines.
Well, the comic lines, it's kind of weird right now for comics because, as we all know, comics come out every week, and these comic shops that are being forced to shut down because of the pandemic that's going on, they aren't. They're able to get their shipments in because the distributor, as far as I know, is not shipping them out because of that reason, because of the COVID. And I think all the comic companies have now joined together and said, we are not going to release same day digital. And because of that, they just delayed comics altogether as far as releasing them. And right now it's kind of in a weird state because we just don't know how long that's going to last for. And I don't, and all these comic shops are going to have a hard time surviving because of that. I know mm-hmm. there's some, I know there's like a comic shop, I think in New Zealand, Seth, that I think that is selling the digital codes of their comics for customers. And that way they can sell them and they'll get the money. And then they're getting approval or something like that. There's something like that that they're doing that these comic mm-hmm. shops are able to sell the digital codes. And that way when they go pick up their physical comics, they'll just pick them up and you know, whatever. And then that way that these stores can survive. I don't think that's gone out to here or maybe some places are doing that. I don't know. So all I know is that Marvel, DC's, all these major comic publishers finally, it took them a long time. They took their sweet time to finally finalize it, but they're doing the right thing by not releasing same day digital and letting these shops kind of survive. And hopefully people come flocking in to buy their books once they open.
Don't comic, like big publishers generally take the paper sales into account when they continue or cancel comic books. So I guess they'd want to keep that going as long as they can.
Well, yeah. I mean, in fact, the publishing is the only way, the actual physical publishing of the comics and selling is the only way to really track if a comic is selling these days, because they don't release digital numbers. And so we don't know if, like for instance, like Immortal Hulk right now is the number one Marvel, I think the number one selling comic at like 100 something copies physically or something like that. It's something maybe it's more than that, but something like that.
Oh,
and,
wow.
And so, which by the way, is like back in the day when I was collecting comics or when I still collect comics, but when I was a little tyke collecting comics, the lowest selling comic was, I think, 100,000 copies.
Whoa.
It used to be the comic industry used to be a lot more lucrative than it is now. But again, this is where I was debating with someone, or not even debating. I think I was just talking with someone about this, who kind of knows maybe some people. And I was trying to get some answers, and no one could really tell me as how much digital sales do go into the factors of these things. And you imagine they would, right? Obviously. I mean, because I only buy digitally.
Mm-hmm, so I would think so.
They have to go in. Yeah. So, but the thing is the diamond, because all the comics are distributed through one seller, and this is a very controversial thing for a lot of people in comics. It's been going on since I was a kid. Diamond Publishing, or is the distributor, Diamond Distribution, is the number one comic distributor. It's the only comic distributor. So they are the ones that basically release the numbers for their comics that are being sold. So they're the ones that say, we sold this many Hulk units, or this is our issues, this is how much we sold for this or that. And we don't, but that's the thing with Comixology and DC and Marvel and all these other comic companies, they don't have to release that information. They're not going to. And, you know, it's interesting. I don't know what they're going to do. I think it really depends. And because Marvel to me is what moved the needle. Obviously, like Dark Horse, they went out right away and said, we're not selling physical any new issues until the comic shops can get it, basically. And DC tried to say, we're going to still release release digital comics. And then they got kind of, once Marvel said, no, we're actually going to just, we're going to not release any physical comic or any digital comics until we kind of figure out what's going on. And they said that could be subject to change.
Mm-hmm. So we'll see these decisions change depending on how long things are closed and how long the economy as a whole is on a downturn, et cetera, what conventions are canceled, things like that.
And so this is where I think, this is why I said the end of the month will a lot of things, not just comics, not just books, everything economy-wise this is an important month. It really, I'm not saying every month everywhere has to be on the same page to move forward, but a number of places need to move forward this month, in my opinion, to really get a good positive trajectory as far as what's going on from those kinds of standpoints. Because I just had a podcast on Marvel Newscast on the other day about this kind of very thing. And we talked about Black Widow. Well, Black Widow is obviously a big movie that's supposed to be coming out this month, and now it's not going to. And what are they going to do with it? Well, Disney, I don't know if you guys know this, but they've closed both their parks. All their parks are closed.
And the last thing I heard about Black Widow, and I don't want to get too far afield from Star Wars, but I think this is relevant because it's like how the entertainment industry is making these huge decisions. So the last thing that I heard about Black Widow was that they were not going to release it direct to home. Like there was some talk of, are these big theater movies just going to be put out on streaming services? And the last I heard was that Disney had said or made no move toward making these theatrical releases direct to home releases. Is that correct?
That is correct. But the reason I'm bringing it up though is because it's just like how Marvel said in their thing about the comics, and that's why I want to bring it back to that, is that they said this could be subject to change. And Disney's not making as much money as they were, not even close. And in fact, they are selling off debts. They are, you know, obviously they're taking pay cuts on the high top, which as they should. They're not bringing, with all the parks being closed, that is a giant moneymaker for them. They need to make money, period. And all I'm saying is Marvel's a part of that. And Black Widow meaning that Black Widow movie and comic books now are all, you know, even though comics are not a giant moneymaker for them, it's still revenue. So at some point they're going to say, we need to do something, got to give, we need to get some money into this because we can't wait. Because we don't know when, because here's the thing, we don't know when everywhere is going to get, because like I just said, we don't know, every place is going to openly, you know, probably open for business, you know, before other places. So do you release digital, physical comics only to certain areas or all together? So that's the thing. I think Marvel and I think other places, once they kind of realize that, you know what, we got to have some revenue come in, you know, unfortunately, we have to start selling our comics digitally. And I think it's going to happen. I think by the end of this month, we'll know, I think, what they're going to do with comics. I would not be shocked if things aren't, you know, everyone stay at home still. And then Marvel and DC, they say, you know what, we got to make some money. They could throw out their comics digitally. And I wouldn't blame them at that point because they gave it a fair shot. They tried, but they've got to make money too. So this is the unfortunate thing of this whole, all these, it's amongst many, many awful other things that are going on. This is another another travesty for things, for people's businesses, you know, unfortunately, but we'll see. I hope, I pray that, and that we are able to move forward after this month, at least somewhat not be back to normal completely. That's not realistic, but something. So we'll see. I don't know what it means for books though. I don't know, because like for releases for the Skywalker box set, right? You would think, well, that could have been pushed back or, you know, whatever, because they have to, you know, but Best Buys are still open and places that have books are still open, like Targets and Walmarts. So, because they're essential businesses, so they sell foods and whatnot. So I don't know if books will be affected by this necessarily, because it kind of falls in line with home video, and home video is part of those, is sold in essential areas. So does that make sense?
It does. I'm not sure myself. I don't know enough about the distribution of those books, whether in terms of which books are sent where. Obviously, obviously, to like we keep an eye out for the stuff, but you can typically buy the newest Star Wars book at a Target, as well as at a Barnes and Noble or something.
Or
And a lot of
Amazon.
people order them from Amazon, and or through local bookstores that may or may not have a connection with an Amazon distribution center. So that and as of now, Amazon is deprioritizing books, and this is just going to it's just going to create a backlog. So yeah, it's just a wait and see at this point. Yeah, I had ordered a book, like a non-Star Wars book recently that I could not get from Amazon because of the Amazon freeze. So I shifted the physical order to an indie bookstore and they could get it, for whatever reasons, because the way their distribution and their ordering system is different. So I think books seems for now that the their availability has been maybe halved, but not completely cut in the way that the comic book shops have.
Crazy. Yeah, because I'm very thankful because I got all my stuff from Amazon. I ordered the Skywalker, the Rise of Skywalker art of book and Rogue One on 4K, and I got those all on time. So I don't know if I'm incredibly lucky or what. I don't know. But yeah, I was able to get those right on time. So we'll
Interesting.
see.
I think it depends on like the order time and the distribution. Like those things might have been sitting in the warehouse a month ago.
Exactly. Yeah, that's a good point. And I think they probably were, like you said, because they all got released on Tuesday. So that would actually line up to what you're saying. So we'll see. I mean, to be honest, these people might be scared to. I could see it going both ways. I could see people being like, people they need material to read and to buy, and here we go. Or saying, you know what, the economy isn't going to be really bad right now. Let's wait until people have a little more money and we can push this out. I have no idea. So it'd be very interesting, that's for sure. So we'll see.
It is interesting because on the alternate side, the games industry hasn't really changed much.
Well, it's because they're you can work from home, right? So they can
Yeah,
keep developing.
exactly. And it's largely digital. If we had any Star Wars games coming out, they probably wouldn't be delayed, but unfortunately, no Star Wars games.
Unfortunately, seriously. Moving on really fast here. Queen's Peril, you said you finished reading it, Megan?
Yeah, so Queen's Peril has had quite a long period in the media copies stage. It doesn't come out until June.
Yeah,
My
I was gonna
update.
say, I was talking to someone about it yesterday. I mean, I haven't read it, but I was talking to someone yesterday who had read the media copy, and I was like, wait, when does this book come out? She's like, July or June. And I was like, you got this book like a month ago.
It's actually quite strange to me because reviews, there's not an embargo. Like reviews can come out now, so. People that they're kind of coming out in like fits and starts, and then by June, I'm not going to remember what happened in this book. So, but my physical media update is that so I currently have two Star Wars bookshelves. They're like loosely in chronological order, one's for canon, one's for legends, and then I have my face out books. I have the Rebel Files and the Jedi Path as like decorative bookends, basically. And I'm starting to have to turn the bookends because with The Rise of Skywalker and Queen's Peril, my canon shelf is getting full, so I may have to reorganize them soon. But that's a
Yeah,
nice problem to have.
that's
that's
not
nice
the worst of
problem.
problems, huh?
Yeah,
That's
it's
not too
quite
bad.
nice.
That's not too bad. All right. So it looks like I almost missed this. It looks like there's a new writer for the Obi-Wan Kenobi series, Joby Harold, and it
Oh, I
looks
totally
like
missed that.
I totally almost missed it completely today. And apparently he's best known for writing the King Arthur movie that Guy Ritchie had directed. And I've actually heard some good things about that movie that people I trust. It
I
didn't get
watched it, but I don't remember anything about it except for big elephants.
I'm
And I
not
don't know if that was actually in the movie or if I've just gotten confused with the fact that I did watch Lord of the Rings around the same time. I'm pretty sure there were big elephants in it.
Yeah, I've heard good things about it.
I'm not familiar with anything he wrote. I didn't know his name at all before, but I did want to include this because the previous writer stepped down after scripts had been completed, and now they've brought in Mr. Harold. And Deborah Chow is still attached to direct, which is, I think,
thank God.
To me, the important part, right?
Yeah, same, yeah. Well, I think that there's what's going to be interesting what they do with this is there's been rumors about turning this into a movie, or is it going to be still a miniseries? I'm hoping it's still a miniseries because I think that's going to be, to me, that's the bread and butter of Disney Plus slash what Star Wars can give Disney even more so as things like this. And don't get me wrong, I need Star Wars in a theater too, but I think miniseries like this is such up Disney's alley for Star Wars. It's picture perfect. And I think that I want to see what they can do with a miniseries like this, not like a seasonal series like The Mandalorian, which we already know is great, but something like that that's a kind of a one and done, or a one kind of miniseries thing, and you can do a sequel miniseries or whatever if you want to, but keep it short and sweet, but don't keep it like 8 episodes long and try to extend it out or just do a quick little movie. I'd like to kind of split the difference. Give me like 3-4 episodes. So I hope they keep that. And it seems like they are. It seems like they are. But that, again, that remains to be seen if they will. But yeah. Do you guys have any preferences? Would you guys prefer to be a movie or a miniseries?
I like miniseries right now. Usually, like, I remember, like, a year or so ago, I would have been like, movie. I love Star Wars as a movie. Yeah. But after The Mandalorian, I'm like, nah, I'm actually kind of sold on this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I really love The Mandalorian a lot more than I thought I would. And, like, I mean, I don't really want a Kenobi movie because it feels too big for, like, Kenobi. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So, and, like, also a miniseries gives me more time with him. More time looking at Ewan McGregor's face. So, you know, I'm okay with that.
I think we discussed a little bit in a previous episode how The Mandalorian has shown that Disney Plus is a really good place to both kind of keep the Star Wars fandom alive and interested with weekly episodes, specifically doing it weekly instead of dropping it all at once, and also for bringing in new fans. And I think that means that this would be a good place to keep Kenobi there rather than make it a movie where it's kind of like people that know they like Star Wars movies will probably go, but frankly, right. Star Wars has lost a bit of its cultural cash in the last couple over the last couple movies as for the like a wider audience. So The Mandalorian has succeeded in bringing back that wider audience, and to me, it seems like that means that a miniseries would be a natural place to reintroduce this like beloved character who's also a really good entry point character.
Yeah, it was cool with The Mandalorian because, like, I would be visiting my sister and she'd have some friends over who are not interested in Star Wars at all. But they know I'm the Star Wars person, obviously. And they'd start talking about The Mandalorian. And I was like, aw, this is so lovely.
And I think there is also some room for debate there. As soon as I said the last couple movies have not had a large cultural cash, I heard thousands of screaming people on Twitter going, box office numbers and Reylo and influences and cultural shifts. And I heard a lot of those conversations. So I want to make it clear that I do know those conversations are going on as well. And that I agree with what Saf said when she was agreeing with me.
Well, I think also you said something, Saf, about just the fact that you have more time with someone. And I think that's what I like about the miniseries. You can really spend a lot more time with Obi-Wan Kenobi and get inside his head a little bit more than a 2-hour film. But yet, I don't necessarily need a whole season of Kenobi necessarily either. I'll take it if they want. But I think you split the difference by having that miniseries, 3-4 episodes. You can really get into like the headspace of the character, because I think that's what I really want to see in the series reflected out is the fact that this person is, one, hiding, and two, has a lot of regrets. And how does he come to accept those regrets? And for me, that's fascinating. And I love that idea of Obi-Wan. He's kind of come at a different, he's gone to Tatooine to fulfill something, but he's also living with the demons that he has to deal with. And I think that to me is going to be the exciting thing to read or to watch, because what exactly, how did he get over being the kind of defeated Jedi to be the confident person that we see take out Darth Maul, and also how he's able to train Luke and lead him on, because he's the same person in episode, he's the same person in episode 3 and 4, but there's a lot that's gone on that makes him more, he has more wisdom in 4, and even more so than he does in episode 3. So where does that come from? And I think that it would be nice to see where that comes from, maybe a little bit in a miniseries. So, and really fast, I want to ask you also, what are you guys' thoughts? What are your thoughts on the rumors? I'm not sure if this has been confirmed or not, but Rosario Dawson as Ahsoka.
I don't think that's true, because the only place I've seen, like literally the only place I've seen reporting it is Green Rant. And I don't necessarily trust Green Rant at the best of times. None of the other trades picked it up or anything. So I personally don't believe it. I would like to see Ahsoka, but I don't know if it's going to happen.
Variety did pick it up.
Oh, Variety to pick it up?
Yeah.
I don't know. I still don't really...
Yeah, Variety based their report on Screen Rant's report, yeah, but also said they had an additional source.
It's not Screen Rant. It's Slash Film.
Well, I don't like Slash Film either.
And Variety said they had confirmed it through a separate person, but
interesting. With these things, I always do hold off until like it's officially confirmed.
Oh, that's fair. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's kind of what I go with these things, especially if like not every single trade is reporting it as confirmed. Like even if just one is, like Variety's pretty good. But still, I generally hold off until we know for sure, because I don't want to get excited about Ahsoka being something and then be let down.
Yeah, that's fair.
I would definitely be interested in seeing her in the live action shows, especially in something like The Mandalorian, with an emphasis on heavy realism. We've seen Togruta like Shakti before, and they are very colorful, and they're very like, she's a Jedi, so she moves very fluidly. And to see a Togruta, who we know is like also a Jedi, but if you were going to put her in the Mandalorian style, I can just imagine her as being like sandy and dusty and kind of slow and in this more Ben Kenobi role. And I think that would be really interesting. Just as like a fan concept, I find that appealing. I'm also waiting on like Lucasfilm to say whether it's true, but I'm tentatively interested in the idea of a live action Ahsoka, period.
Awesome. Yeah, I'm excited. I think anything live action, I think Rosario Dawson's a solid actress. I like her a lot, actually, and everything I've seen her in a number of things. And yeah, I think she seems like a good choice. So I've gone on record many a time saying before all this that I've always said I have a very deep suspicion that Ahsoka is going to take Baby Yoda, and I think this to me confirms it. We'll see
the Thelonious thing, most Thelony,
and also makes the most sense, which I like. But anyway, that's
gonna
that's
ride in on the Loth Wolf.
Give me that mythic stuff. Oh my god, are you kidding me? Give it to me. All right, so we got a couple main topics. We have the Clone Wars has returned, we'll start with that. And then we also have the Rise of Skywalker novelization, which I want to talk a little bit about as well. But we'll start with the Clone Wars. And Seth, you kind of said it. You kind of summed it up best for me, I think. And I'm going to let you kind of take it away. What's your take on the recent episodes? We've got the Bad Batch arc that just completed. That was, what, 4 episodes? And we also have a new Ahsoka arc. And that's about to wrap up, I think, tomorrow. Wait, no. We have 2 more episodes. After we have tomorrow, and then we have 1 more, right?
Yes, one comes out, like we're recording on Thursday, it'll be out on this Friday, and then one more, and then the Siege of Mandalore begins.
That's what we're all looking forward to, but explain what you said about the Clone Wars. I thought you summed it up pretty well.
So at the moment, I'm enjoying the Clone Wars. Like, I'm like, yeah, this is good, I'm here for it, but honestly, beyond that, I'm not really having any more thoughts about it. It's just like, I'm enjoying it, and otherwise, I'm like, meh, it's Star Wars.
I think what you had mentioned before is that's partially because we've seen the Bad Batch before, and do you feel that the Ahsoka stuff also feels kind of repetitive or no?
I don't think it's repetitive. It is interesting seeing her like struggle with things after leaving the Jedi. I think just partly because the arc isn't over yet, that I'm kind of like holding off on my deeper thoughts about it because I don't really know where it's gonna go yet. It's like, it's at the halfway point now, so it's like things are starting to happen, but it's not like getting into the main meat of it, I guess. So I'm like, I'm really enjoying seeing Ahsoka. I love Ahsoka so much. It's reminding me how much I love Ahsoka. But otherwise, I'm just like, it's cool Ahsoka stuff. And I like the two new characters.
See, this is, I also have like zero feelings about the Big Batch, the Big Batch. But
actually a better name, the Big Batch.
That's just Wrecker by himself. So I don't have many feelings about those clones, but this is actually, I'm like, this is my time. I love Ahsoka now. I never did before.
Oh my God.
I finally care about Ahsoka and everyone
I'm
else.
I'm so happy.
So quiet. And I'm like, I'm finally here with you. And they're like, where were you 10 years ago? And I'm like, I'm sorry. But this arc gave me what I've wanted from the Clone Wars for a really long time, which is like an in-depth conversation between Ahsoka and other teens, which feels realistic. I always found, this is me having an unpopular opinion and I recognize that, but I always found a lot of Ahsoka's friendships to feel very stilted, and they didn't talk like kids. It sounded to me very much like adult men trying to write teenage girls and totally failing. Whether or not it was always that, I do not know, but I felt very disconnected from that. And in this case, finally, the dialogue is sharp, the characters are funny, the dynamics between the sisters are very clear. Each of them wants their own thing that's based on their experiences, which we as an audience can understand and then root for them as they try to get the thing that's like essential for what their motivation has been for this, in the case of the sisters, their whole lives. And for Ahsoka, this period of time when she's so lost and she obviously has so much longing in her, but she can't tell anyone about it because they don't like Jedi, and they have good, like, they have interesting points to make about why the Jedi have kind of failed the society that they live in. And I'm just like, I'm here for all of this.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
So those are all of my feelings about the Ahsoka arc. I want to like write and read all the meta about kind of the sisters' philosophies and what Ahsoka's going through right now. I've been thinking a lot about the Ahsoka novel, because one thing this arc is not giving me is Ahsoka introspection. It just doesn't have the chops to like really show what she's feeling without her saying it to someone. And so I wish there was more of that. We got more of that in the Ahsoka novel, and I keep hearing like lines from the Ahsoka novel kind of flip through my head as I watch the Clone Wars, things about the way she thought about Anakin and Obi-Wan, the way she thought about what the purpose of being a Jedi was, is all very similar. And that's
that does remind me of that moment where they're flying past the place where Anakin is and they can both like sense each other. That bit got me right in the heart. I cried a little bit there. Nothing I love more than tragic master apprentice relationships in Star Wars. It gets me. I agree with everything you're saying about Ahsoka. Like, I'm really liking this Ahsoka a lot. I mean, I love Ahsoka, but I'm liking this Ahsoka particularly. And I think one thing that's good about these two arcs is they're very clearly leading into Siege of Mandalore with Rex and Ahsoka. Because, like, at the end of the Bad Batch, Rex is kind of becoming disillusioned with the way the clones are being treated and everything. And in this, Ahsoka is obviously becoming a bit disillusioned with the Jedi already and what doing good for the galaxy actually means. And I mean, we know from the Siege of Mandalore is happening next, and in Siege of Mandalore is where like Ahsoka and Rex reunite, and like theoretically Rex like goes off and takes out his control chip or something. So it's like, it's a big moment for both of those characters who kind of have in large ways been the core of the Clone Wars.
You know, I've always liked Ahsoka, and I came to this Clone Wars a little bit late. I was a couple of seasons behind, and I really grew to love the character. I understand, because I don't know, obviously, what the teenage girls go through or sound like, and I'm not going to pretend that I do. But I do recognize that it may not be what you may relate to or want to hear. But I always said the same thing about just any character from that universe, because they're not really the kind of the same thing. And I kind of like the idea that they're Jedi, and they're trained to be Jedi. So they're not just going to be typical, you know, they're Padawans. They're basically being trained to be these peacekeepers slash warriors. So they're going to be not talk like, you, it's like average, you know, day-to-day, even people of the galaxy, they're going to be a little bit different. They're still going to have some of those things there too, but they're kind of trained not to be like that. So I never took it like that, Megan, for me when I watched it. So that, for me, at least, their dialogue always worked for me. Like, I always loved when she talked to Barriss Offee and hung out with her, and they had the whole brain thing going on, and they invaded Geonosis. And I always loved that stuff when they were trapped underneath the rubble. I always loved their interactions. I always thought, for the most part, I mean, not every episode of Ahsoka was great. I mean, but like, even like, but you know what though, like the slaver arc when she was with Lux at first and whatnot, like there were some really good stuff there, I thought, or at least with, I thought that she had some good dialogue there. And everything. I don't know. But I will say, with these episodes in particular, it was nice to get a different perspective of Ahsoka that's not just a Jedi perspective. And that what I would definitely appreciate and understand, that we didn't get as much with the original episodes. And that I can understand where it was probably nice to get that perspective.
Was there a Zygarian on Kessel in the last episode?
Yes, there was. Yeah. I did notice that
moment
too.
Mm-hmm. Where she sees that guy. It was like, so there was no dialogue. You could just see, yep, she like tenses up and then she leaves. And I thought it was a really great callback to the
Yeah, it is. And I actually just recently watched that arc. I don't know why. I was just watching some Clone Wars on Disney Plus, and I kind of just picked a random episode. And then as it went on, it got into the slaver arc, and I kind of just stopped watching around that point because I had to go do something else, and I just didn't pick it up again. And so, yeah, like, that was fresh in my memory when I saw that, and I was like, oh God, okay.
Yeah,
it was intense.
That was really intense. And I think one of the nice things about this arc is that Ahsoka's finally gained to talk to other people her age, not as like a Jedi. Yeah. She gets to interact with them as other teenage girls, which is something she hasn't really done before. And so I've been really enjoying watching her kind of like try and navigate that as someone who's like, obviously has probably always wanted this, but has never really been able to have it. Like, even with Barriss, she would try and have that friendship, and Barriss would like kind of shut her out because of the Jedi training.
Exactly. And I think that you see the difference in Ahsoka with the sisters. And I think that's really interesting. And also kind of it's a good dynamic. And I like that. I think that's why I really like the fact that if you go back to in these episodes, she doesn't act like that. And I'm appreciative of the fact that she doesn't act. She has a different, more of a, what's the word I'm looking for? I don't say regal, but something like that. Like she's obviously she's very much educated and brought up and to be a certain way. And this is a different lifestyle that she wasn't, you know, used to or didn't really think about. And she's getting that different perspective. And again, like, as we get older, we see different perspectives as people. We understand more. That's the whole point of wisdom, right? You don't just get wisdom because you don't just sit around in your house and you think you know everything. You get wisdom by experiencing things, and sometimes those things can be hard, and you witness things that you don't necessarily want to witness, and you're like, crap, like, this is not something I want to deal with. You're seeing that with Ahsoka a little bit with this. You're seeing the kind of the what happens with people that are in a different kind of whole different world, even though it's on the same planet, it's a whole different world. And she's, you know, introduced to something that she necessarily wasn't really prepared for necessarily, I think, from her Jedi training, because it kind of protect her from that. I love the episodes of the Clone Wars even before that, where she got to, you know, where she loses her lightsaber and she needs to go find it. And she kind of learns a lot, you know, through that, and has to go through the underworld. And you're seeing her go through the underworld here, of experiencing someone who's very gracious and also someone who doesn't trust her. And is pretty much has it out for her. And that hasn't really happened in a, I think, in that kind of sense. We obviously Barisoffi was out for in a much different way. But this is a little bit different. It's a lot more honest, I think, in upfront saying, I don't trust you. I don't like you. And you're stepping on my territory. And that's something that she really hasn't really dealt with, I don't think. And it's nice to see. So, but here's the ultimate, the problem with those episodes. They're just not action packed. And so because of that, I still like them. They're not terrible, but they're just not incredibly like enthralling for me. I wasn't like, oh man, that was great. I was like, oh yeah, a solid episode. And again, that's kind of TV that's kind of classic TV, right? It's not meant to be, you can't always expect, you know, grade A 10 action packed moments. Cause then everything becomes the same. So it's definitely a change of pace. And I like that. I like the fact that it's a change of pace, but it doesn't make me want to go back and rewatch the episodes necessarily either. And with a Bad Batch, go ahead.
I have something to say about like the amount of action in these episodes, because there's been a lot of discussion about whether they feel like filler or not. And unfortunately, I can't actually say what I want to say about this because it's in the episode that comes out tomorrow. So ask me about this later.
All right, I'll ask you next episode, next month.
Yes. Yeah, and I. But here's the thing: I don't mind these kinds of episodes because I appreciate them. I mean, yeah, I like character. It's a very much character building for Ahsoka, and I like that. And I think we've needed that for her a long time, and it's a long time coming. And I actually really like the sisters. I really like the. I forgot the sisters' names, but the one that's not doesn't trust Ahsoka. I love her.
That's Rafa.
She cracks me up.
And the other one's Rafa. Trace.
That's right.
Actually managed to pull that out of my memory. I'm impressed.
That's really good. Yeah, Rafa's great. I like both sisters, but Rafa's great.
I've been writing about both Clone Wars and Star Trek Picard, which has a character named Raffi. So there's been some very careful spelling around Rafa and Raffi.
Right. Yeah, so I'm really excited. I mean, listen, I love Star Wars and I love Ahsoka. I do. I love the character. So I'm really excited to watch tomorrow's episode and with great interest. And I can't wait. And I can't obviously wait for Siege of Mandalore. So
I do want to say one thing. The animation is gorgeous. The lighting is amazing. So oh my God. So like good. I thought the Lost Missions was gorgeous, but this is just on a whole new level. It's so good.
It makes me long for more animation like this for Star Wars, and if they're gonna do animation, do animated miniseries, movies, whatever, do it in this kind of animation style, because it is, like you said, Saf, it's gorgeous. And the Bad Batch, I mean, I watched that, my mouth was dropped open a lot of times. And again, the Bad Batch wasn't my favorite stories necessarily either. I enjoyed them, but honestly, the animation is what really drove it home for me. I'm like, man, this looks incredible.
So many background characters in the Bad Batch. It was so impressive.
Yeah. So I think all in all, I think we all kind of agree that we're all, I think, well, I'm not, Megan's not a big, you're not the biggest Clone Wars fan. I know that, but.
No, but I'm enjoying this season. Like season 6 and 7, both have been like mostly highs with lows here and there, like any TV show would have. I'm enjoying it. They're doing a lot of things that I've wanted them to do for a while, which are not connected to me saying I want them. They're just apparently here now. Yeah. But so I'm really enjoying them.
Cool. Yeah. I'm really enjoying them too. I'm not in love with them, but I think it's all prep for the Siege of Mandalore, which I think that's going to be the game changer. Hopefully, knock on wood. So our last main topic is going to be the Rise of Skywalker novelization, and I really want to talk about this because I have not read the book, unfortunately. I haven't had a chance to. I think I'm eventually going to listen to the audiobook. I was given the audiobook, and I still plan on checking it out, but this obviously expanded a lot from the movie, and we could talk a lot about that. And I think those are things that are worth talking about, but, and I'm not sure, do you guys have opinions? Does it make you accept things in the Rise of Skywalker at all? Like for instance, go ahead, Seth.
I have I actually haven't read it yet. Cause I haven't had time. And by, I mean, I haven't had the time. I mean, I've been more sucked into other books.
Oh, gotcha.
Not that I don't want to read this novelization, but it's not like on my shelf where the other books are like right there in front of me. So I'm reading them. But I have seen like some parts of it and I'm like, I dig that. That's cool. Like I already like the movie. So it's not like it's going to change my opinion that much.
Mm-hmm.
So there are a couple points in here that I definitely walked out of the movie with a lot of questions, which were answered through like blatant exposition, but they were at least answered in the novel. And I'm glad for that in a way. I thought it's hard to keep my opinions about the movie out of my opinions about the novel, but I do try to do that. So there's some things that were in the book that I wish were in the movie because they would have just been a little bit of, here's an answer to this question, especially the stuff about Palpatine's son and Palpatine being in a clone body and some of the connections to the Mandalorian. So, and there's a lot. So we should probably do those separately, but maybe if we want to, but, I don't mind them. Other parts that I enjoyed were like the Zori Bliss stuff. She has a couple scenes that are not in the movie. Leia has a couple scenes that are not in the movie. I actually don't think they changed Leia's parts enough in the book. I'm sure there was a lot of push and pull about that. The new scenes were okay. I don't necessarily feel like I know Zori Bliss in like some deep, meaningful way now, but it was nice to get more of a sense of the atmosphere. However, I do feel this movie as a whole relied too much on gotchas and references and like key phrases, and the novel could not fix that, especially not by adding in more key phrases and references. However, there was an Alphabet Squadron shout out, so 10 out of 10 actually.
Wait, there was?
Yeah, so a character, there's a couple different expanded universe call signs that come in at the end. And one of them is, I believe the ghost is one of them. I believe, so Jaeger and Kaz from Resistance are definitely in there. And then someone is referred to as Alphabet 2. We do not know who Alphabet 2 is. I have so much speculation about this. But yeah, so that reference is in there.
Oh my god, that's so exciting.
They don't have call signs in the book. Like Alphabet Squadron does not have call signs. So this person is Alphabet 2 either because Alphabet 1 is dead or missing, or because Alphabet 2 is a reference, is like a Rogue One style reference to something else. And
Like Alphabet Squadron has continued after like those characters have moved on somewhere.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so exciting. I appreciate that there's a call out to that.
Yeah. My favorite theory is that Hera is Alphabet 1 and Quell is Alphabet 2. So she's also Alphabet Leader, because their hierarchy is a little messed up. It's like everything about them. So that's why 2 is the wing leader, because Hera is like the honorary Alphabet 1.
That makes sense.
Complete fan theory. Anyway, awesome. Is that relevant to anything you were going to say, Paul?
No.
Yeah, but
you know,
I'm here for that. You made me want to read the book even more just for the fact that they say that.
Well, and I guess for me, the reason why I want to bring it up is the main reveal of Palpatine's son and who he is and the reveal of that way, because spoiler alert, if you wanted to wait, read the book, I want to bring it up because it brings something up about the canonicity of novelizations. And I want to pose this question to you both, but I need to kind of explain what this is first. So spoiler alert, if you haven't seen read the book, you know, 3, 2, 1, when I talk about it, it's revealed that the son of Palpatine is actually a clone of Palpatine that doesn't have any force abilities, and that he eventually goes rogue and falls in love with someone and they have a daughter, and that all that the power that he thought he would inherit, that this clone would inherit, then it essentially came to Rey, inheriting, you know, from that family line and whatnot. So that was a big reveal from there. And I know a lot of people have opinions about Rey Palpatine, you know, whatever. And I personally love it. And I know that's whatever for a lot of people, but what I'm wondering here is this, is that, cause I remember when the movie came out, I'm like, well, who's Palpatine's son? Who, what is this? What exactly? Cause I don't necessarily blame JJ and Chris Terrio for trying to overly explain everything in the movie. Cause I think that that's what one, the books are for, or, and not necessarily the novelization though. And so what's fascinating about the novelization is that it does flesh out quite a bit, way more than I was even anticipating, to be honest. And when you got a definitive answer of who Palpatine's son is, which is not exactly a terrible, I don't think it's terrible myself, but it's definitely complicated. And you don't, how they describe that into a film, I don't know, for a mom and pop to be like, what is it? You know, what is this? So it's very interesting. But it brought to my attention, I always came back to this idea, and I'm curious what you both think. So here's my question to you. So the novelizations are, what is it famously said about them from the Star Wars films? What has Lucasfilm always said about them?
They're canon, except where they contradict the movies.
Exactly. So there's, and all of the novelizations have, not all, but the previous, before the sequel trilogy, I will say, even the sequel trilogy now at this point, because the Poe met Rey in the Force Awakens novelization, and then she acts like she meets him for the first time in The Last Jedi. So we already have a contradiction there, right? Okay. So what I'm wondering is, we already have an example, all these examples of the novelizations, they help flesh things out, but they aren't necessarily true blue canon. Do you think that, even though, like, I'm assuming that the son of Palpatine is a failed clone, clone of Palpatine, who's actually a good person and wants to do the right thing, et cetera, et cetera. Do you think that that is still going to be canon, or does it leave room for another story to be told and totally retconned or ignored from the novelization because of the previous things we've already got in novels that are kind of, you know, swept under the rug or ignored anyway? Because the fact that it's never explained on screen as far as who exactly the son is, the novelization can be trumped at this point, mm-hmm. because so many different things can be trumped. And that is what I'm kind of proposing to you both, is that would you be whether you like it or not, and I forgot if you guys like it or not, but whether you like the Rey Palpatine and son of Palpatine or not, do you like the idea of that the son is a failed clone, a literal failed clone, a la Boba Fett? Which, by the way, I like the idea. That's a callback to that necessarily. It seems maybe it's an accident that is a callback to the Boba Fett, Jango Fett dynamic, but I think it kind of is a callback to that. I think that's really cool. Or do you like that idea? Or would you want something else? Or are you open to a different story with that? Because I think it leaves itself open for it, to be honest.
So, personally, there were a lot of things in Rise of Skywalker I did not like. I think I'm the one that was the most disappointed with the movie out of this trio of people. But this idea specifically, if we're just talking opinion, I like this. I like that the idea of like a force squib is great. I think that growing up as a person who is the son of like Emperor Palpatine but doesn't have any force powers could be a great story. I also like that this neatly answers the question of, did Palpatine have a wife, with a neat little no. So we can all go back to not worrying about that. And then, there's the canon question, though, which is, like, as I said before, Lucasfilm has always said that the novels are canon basically where it is convenient and where they do not contradict the movies. However, I think there's a more complicated order of operations there that we cannot fully discuss because we are not part of the story group and I don't know what the hierarchy is. But for example, if I think what we've seen in the past with Legends canon is that if Dave Filoni pitched an idea about Palpatine's son and he's like a natural born son and he's force sensitive, and George Lucas signed off on that, and Filoni went and made that show, that show would be more canon than in this book. However, is that going to be different in the new canon? I'm not sure. I think the order of operations has changed. I think it does come down to who is making this piece of media, how lucrative, in this case, this piece being the proposed Palpatine's son alternate universe movie or whatever, is who's making this, is it expected to be lucrative more so than this book? And that's where you'll start to make decisions like that. The new canon, as we know, is designed to be a little more cohesive, but doesn't always turn out that way. So that's my answer to that, is that yes, I can see it being changed one day, but it depends not just on, it's not just a cut. Books are canon until they're not. It's their canon if certain decisions outweigh other decisions, which we don't know about, right?
No, you pretty much answered that. Really quick, Sapphire, you answer if you have an answer. When I heard that, I immediately thought, well, its novelizations are easily trumped and easily, you know, you can't really retcon, you can retcon different things in books, but you can't really just outright ignore things like they do in the novelizations, like Rey meeting Poe for the first time in the Force Awakens. You can completely ignore that and say, oh, that didn't happen in the movie, so it wasn't, so it's not canon, so blah, blah, blah. So I feel like because it's in the novelization, you can easily do away with that whole idea and origin if you wanted to, because it is a novelization and there's so many different things. Like in the original A New Hope novel, Owen Lars is Obi-Wan's brother, or excuse me, Return of the Jedi. So, I mean, there's a lot in Yoda's Blue and Empire Strikes Back. Countless other things that are totally not canon, obviously. So I just wonder with that, because of that reason that it's a novelization, that it could, do you think it could be easily just even more so than just a normal retcon would be? And for coming from the comic book world,
so
that
I guess
is
my answer is yes then.
Yeah, exactly. And so coming from the comic book world, it's all about how do you fit different things and how can you ignore things and whatever. So I'm always interested how they will fit this into future canon stories in general. But I also, that's where I got my brain going a little bit, saying, will this actually be retconned again? Because they'll say, you know what? Well, we want to change it. We don't want it to be just so cut and dry. We want to make it a little more dramatic. And there's a great story pitched by X and such writer, and they want to do this, and it's a great idea. And we're gonna change it up because of that reason. Because it's a novelization.
Well, that's exactly what I said, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Example.
So, Saf, do you have an opinion on that?
I think I mostly just agree with what y'all are saying. When it comes to the clone in particular, I'm okay with it. Like, I think I made a Twitter thread a while back when I first like found out about it, where I was like, the idea of Palpatine having a clone that's like a failed clone that then goes good and is like, nah, screw you, Dad, I'm having a kid, and then not let you touch this kid at all. Like, I like the idea of that character arc, and honestly, I'd like a story about that, or even like a story about her mother instead. Because I mean, the idea of like love changing people in Star Wars is a thing, and I don't know, I could dig a romance book about that. I'm not a huge fan of romance books, but that particular one just seems weird, like a weird dynamic, and I'm here for that.
Yeah.
Palpatine Jr.
Yeah. Like, the idea of that is interesting. Honestly, otherwise,
I want to read that book.
I'm sure. I'd read that book. Yeah. I feel like that would make a good Star Wars romance book. Like,
no, yeah, exactly.
Get someone on that.
Yeah. Let's, and honestly, I want to know what made him turn away from Palpatine. Like, what drove him that way? Like, again, maybe he wasn't force sensitive, but he was being led by, there was something drawing him away from his father, like making him, you know, again, adding to that mythicism, if you will, that I love so much about Star Wars. So I would love to see that story of the son of Palpatine, the clone Palpatine, and just kind of him growing up and then resenting his father or he is or whatever. And then again, that going back to Rey and her rejecting her whole family, you know, line, and then taking on a whole new line. So I like that stuff. So I would love to see it. other things about there's lots of there's a Kylo Ren Chewbacca scene in the novelization that I don't want to spoil too much on, but I know that that was sounds interesting. There, it definitely feels it fleshes out. Like I said, the book, from what I've heard, all the spoilers I've read, it fleshes out a lot, and it's a bummer. I will say, and you guys all know, I'm a giant Rise of Skywalker fan. It's my favorite Disney Star Wars film. It's up there. I love it. And I have to say, there's a couple things I wish they would have put in there. And I think for me, I would have loved a little more explanation about the Emperor, just because it shut other people up about the Emperor and saying, well, how did he survive? He'll tell me. He'll give me a screen by diagram, flashpoint presentation of how Palpatine survived. It's like, okay, just, you know, I wish some of that stuff would be in there so I wouldn't have to hear people complain about it. That's mainly it. I understand what the few lines of dialogue of exposition they don't want to get into to try to overly explain everything for people, like, you know, dark magic or, you know, dark science, cloning, only things the Sith knew. I get it. That makes sense. What does it mean exactly though? Okay. All right. You know, do we have to get into this? So I don't know. I liked all the stuff that I read and heard about it, but you know, I know some people wanted that in the movie. I understand. I don't necessarily need it or agree with it, but you know, I understand. But yeah, it does flesh out a lot.
There's one example in here that I think is a really great one that I do not believe should have been in the movie and was a perfect like deep cut to put in the book because it rewards people who are like completionist fans, and because it's a very I think it's an emotionally satisfying moment, which is when Rey learns that Palpatine, like the Force Dyad, is like the light side version of what the Rule of Two was supposed to be. So Palpatine tried to create a Force Dyad with Anakin, and the quote from the book is, "The Rule of Two, a master always in desperate search of a yet more powerful apprentice, was a pale imitation, an unworthy but necessary successor to the older, purer doctrine of the Dyad." And I think really cool stuff could be done with the Force Dyad idea. Like, really want to see more characters. I love characters.
That concept, yeah.
Yeah, oh, like, give us High Republic characters who are in Force Dyads with each other. And the idea of the Rule of Two being a corruption of that or the dark side version of that is just, like, super cool. But a little too wordy and a little too much to be in the movie. So that's one that I think was perfectly suited for the novel.
I love that.
One thing that I'm like, a lot of people seem to take the idea of the Force Dyad from the movie as like Kylo and Rey being soulmates, where it's very clearly like stated in the movie that it's been there through generations, that the Skywalkers and the Palpatines have had this Dyad for a long time. Which I find interesting, the fact that like Vader and Palpatine or Anakin and Palpatine had this, and like Luke and like all of those people were connected this entire time, and they were always going to be drawn back to each other through the Force. Like, I think that's cool. I think a generational Force Dyad is a very cool idea too.
Yeah,
it as a generational Force Dyad though.
He said it's been unseen through generations.
Well, so, but meaning I was in general, like in general generations of people, like just not just of their line.
No,
like,
I think he's talking about those lines in particular.
I was under the impression that it could be anyone, that it's not necessarily romantic, and it's not necessarily just Skywalkers and Palpatines, but they're like the two like most powerful families, basically. So it happened to manifest. But
I think it makes sense that it's for all of them, kind of like for that particular line, because they do kind of keep coming back together through all of the trilogies.
I never took it that way because I always took the Force Dyad as like a very its own thing. And yeah, that's just me. But they never, you know what? They haven't specifically explained that. So you could be right. I have no idea. But I will say, I like the idea of the Force Dyad. Not, it does not necessarily have to be a romantic thing. Even though I do think there was romantic tension now in retrospect with all three films together between Kylo Ren and Rey. But I think it's one of those things where they had the natural dyad, and then those just the feelings and stuff like that at the end just came naturally. because they both understood each other and he didn't know what that meant. And that turned into probably something more than, you know, just average feelings, if that makes sense. So that's what I took it as. I don't think it necessarily always has to be a love dyad necessarily. I agree with that completely. But I love it. I think it's great. And I think that it only enhanced the relationship. It would make sense if two people would fall in love because they were so connected like that. I mean, that's not totally out of the realm of possibility, right? So, but at the same time, yeah, I think it's one of the great aspects of this sequel trilogy. And I think I got to give Chris Terrio a lot of credit for writing it because it was that they brought that into being. I mean, I think Rian Johnson kind of, you know, he did it out of a necessity to get these characters together to build the tension in his movie, which is honestly a great idea. One of the best things about The Last Jedi. And I love how Chris Terrio kind of put it all together. So, yeah, I would love Force dyads from like the High Republic, Old Republic, whatever. Give me some kind of ancient Force dyad thing. And it doesn't have to be like, you know, again, man and woman. Give me, you know, two men, two women, you know, whatever. You know, give me something that's really, you know, mythical about it, if you will. So yeah, I'm all about the Force dyad. Anything else about?
Let's see. I liked the added Leia parts. Parts of this novel felt like the expanded universe in the same way that brief scene of Luke and Leia training did, and getting more of that was nice.
Yeah. No, totally.
Other than that, I think the novel had flaws. I think the movie had flaws. But I'm not going to sit here being the one that was like, the
movie is flawless, Megan.
This was dumb for reasons. So I want to be enthusiastic and have fun with it. So the Leia parts were cool.
There you go.
So would you say that if you liked the movie, you'll probably like the novelization, and if you didn't like the movie, then the novelization is probably not going to help much?
Yeah, and it depends on what you did and didn't like about it. I was a little bit disappointed that they didn't really do anything with the Finn and Poe relationship. It not only, like, not really gave any quarter to, like, shipping them, but also there just, like, was a weird lack of introspection from them in what I thought were some important scenes. So that was kind of weird. So if that was a thing that you were, like, unhappy about in the movie, that would not be solved by reading the novel. But if you're interested in, like, Zori Bliss backstory or in more Leia stuff or in more Rose stuff, Rose is in it a little bit more. There's more about Dominic Monaghan's character. So if you liked the movie for any of those reasons or wanted to know more about those, then that's definitely here. If I was going to, like, rank the novelizations, I guess this would not be in my top three, I think.
That's fair. All right. Well, I plan on listening to the audiobook at some point. I've watched the movie a million times already, and I'm planning on watching it a million more because I love this movie to death. Not going to lie. So I guess we'll kind of wrap up there. I guess next
episode. Look at us go at our efficient podcasting today.
I know, we're awesome today. What's the next episode going to be about? Do we know? Do we have anything being released besides Siege of Mandalore, right?
And yeah, so we got to talk about Siege of Mandalore. We've been waiting forever. So long for this.
18
so
years.
Long. 18 long years. I don't know. Has that actually been 18 years?
No, it is not.
Okay, it feels like it.
It feels like it. Yeah, I'm a Seth.
What's the Harry Potter reference? I've been 13 years in Azkaban. That's what I was doing.
That's what it feels like, honestly.
I'm not a Harry Potter fan. I don't know this stuff. So
we don't anyway. Have a lot of book releases coming out. Yeah. The next major book release, if it's not delayed, is Shadowfall, which is the Alphabet Squadron sequel, on June 23rd. So it really is going to be like TV and comics for the foreseeable future.
Yeah. So Megan, tell people where they can find you.
Yeah. Well, thanks guys for coming on. I think because I've been socially distancing, it's really nice to be on a podcast and talk to people. So
yeah.
And thank you to everyone who's listening. I know I'm listening to a ton of podcasts right now because I just want to hear human voices. I live with someone, but I want to hear other human voices. So Yeah, so thank you. Saf, were you going to say something about that?
Yeah, no, I just fully agree. I've been listening to heaps of podcasts lately, and podcasting with people has been kind of keeping me going. I mean, I live with friends as well, but sometimes you just got to talk to people outside your household when it's been a while, you know?
Yes. So if you want to, you can find my work on StarWars.com, on Star Wars Insider, and Den of Geek. I'm on Twitter at blogfullofwords. I think those are all the things. Blogfullofwords.blogspot.com is my kind of home base / resume / it used to be my blog.
I know that feeling.
2020 mood.
Yep, 2020 mood. All right, I'm going to steal it after this now. You can find me on Twitter at Wanderlustin. You can also, I guess, like, play games with me if you want to, because I'm playing a lot of games. I'm generally Wanderlustin on, like, all the platforms.
We should play Destiny together. I know we live in very different time zones, but we should do that.
I'm going to have to download it again on my Xbox, but I can do that, and we should play it. Because you're on Xbox, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm playing mostly on PC, but there's the whole sharing, like, the shared accounts now, so I can jump on Xbox and play with you. And you can also find me at patreon.com/wanderlustin, which is where I put most of my writing nowadays. And I also just put up the first two chapters of the novel I'm working on there. So if you're curious about my creative writing, that's there.
Cool. Right on. You can find me on Twitter at Herman22 with two N's, aka PThug. You also find me on a number of other podcasts. You'll see my profile page, but I want to talk about the Comic Binge podcast. We have a new episode about Adam the Blue Marvel. He's a Marvel character that I'm very, very excited to talk about. We talk about him and his probably future involvement in the MCU going forward, and also where you can binge more comics about him. So check out that episode. It should be dropping any day now. So, yeah, check that out. So, everyone from Blaster Cannon, thank you so much for listening. We'll see you next time.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for listening. I'm sad to report this has been the last episode of Blaster Cannon. We've had a great time making it and hope you'll join us for the next endeavor. Thanks to Den of Geek for supporting us so far, and may the Force be with you.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.